Alan Gring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2016. Lecture 13, delivered on October 4, 2016. The title of this lecture is Bonds.
Tonight, bonds. Bonds represent debt, as opposed to stock, which represents equity. Although there's a lot in common. Securities are securities in some ways, and principles of finance abide both of them about the same. Now, the term bonds is kind of a generic. Sometimes when I say a bond, what I technically might mean is a note or a bill, a debt instrument. But in starting out with the origin of a bond, a new issue. I am a company and I need to borrow $1 billion. I don't want to raise the money with stock. I want to raise it with debt. Debt is generally cheaper than equity, especially on an after-tax basis, so at least at first. But so what I'm going to do, I'm a big corporation, Megacorp International, and I want to borrow a bunch of money. So what I will do is I will go to an investment bank. You, madam, are an investment bank. And what you will do is you will say, okay, we're going to work up this issue. It'll be new issue, $1 billion of, let's say, 20-year paper. That'll be, so it's a bond, it's more than 7 years and all that. Okay, so the first thing you'll do, you're going to set up a syndicate of other investment banks that will participate in this. You'll be the lead underwriter. You are going to buy this bond. I, as the borrower, am going to be done with it as soon as the issue is bought by you. Then you will spread the issue out among the other members of the syndicate, and then you guys will go to the task of selling the bonds to your investors, your clients. You are one of the members of the syndicate. You are going to sell some of this paper to this filthy rich man right here. You will sell some to this trust fund, to this insurance company. You, as a syndicate member, will sell some to this actual incredibly rich man. He's George Soros, but he masquerades as some guy hanging out in a finance class because he never really learned finance. So George Soros comes to my class dressed like this too, just so I can learn this. Okay, the hell with you. Anyway, okay, and that's how it will be taken care of. Now, eventually, they'll flip this stuff. I mean, the rich investors might not keep it. They might flip it, especially with stock, but we'll talk about that later. However, you as the lead underwriter are going to have your lawyers and your accountants work up the indenture agreement. This is the loan agreement between the lenders and the borrower, between the buyers of the bond and the seller of the bond, between the purchasers of the bond and the issuer of the bond. I'm using the same concept, just showing you the different synonyms for it. I am the seller of the bond. I am the issuer of the bond. The lenders to me are the buyers of the bond, the lenders to me of the money that I need. Now, the indenture agreement is going to be a massive document. I had actually been curious. I'd never seen an actual indenture agreement. And it took me a while before some broker actually showed me. It's a thick document. It's got all these provisions and covenants in it. Things like, for example, you're representing the side of the lenders, okay? So you want to make sure their interests are covered. You'll have things like, for example, there will be a trustee who will be in my company or have his or her nose in my company at all times to make sure that I don't do anything that would put their loans at risk. So the trustee might say no to certain risky projects that I might want to take on because those risky projects might threaten the cash flow. The bond agreement will make sure. Now remember, in corporate and government debt, there is no payment of principal until the end when the entire issue is paid off with one payment. But along the way, you're going to make sure that covenant has some kind of sinking fund. So I'm putting money aside at all times so that by the end, in what did I say, 20 years, there will be $1 billion so I can pay off the bill. Okay? All of those things are going to be part of it. There will probably be some restrictions on dividends that I can pay. I can't just go wild with dividends. I will have to reinvest a lot of the money to keep the company growing, to make sure that the cash flow stays robust, so the EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes, is strong enough to be able to pay the interest payments. There will be rules on what I can borrow after this. In other words, this might be senior debt. So I might need to borrow some money afterwards, and this would put rules on how much I could borrow and under what circumstances and conditions. So there'd be all kinds of things going on behind the scenes. But at the end of the day, there would be a new issue debt out there. I am Corporation ABC. The SOs are my initials, ABC. And I am going to issue 5.4% 2036. Now, that coupon right there is just a percentage. Immediately, for any calculation whatsoever, turn that into a dollar amount. It is always stated as a percent of par. Face value of this debt, all debt, is $1,000. Unless I say differently, with corporate and government debt, the face is $1,000. Turn it into a dollar amount. That is how much these lenders are going to get every year per $1,000 of issue. Now, actually, in the real world, they would divide it up into two $27 payments. Semi-annually. Some are even doing quarterly or monthly payments these days. I mean, but we'll work with annual to start with, and then later we'll assume semi-annual. But for now, annual will do for the first presentation round. But remember, you always know the face. I don't have to tell you the face. You know the face. The face is $1,000. Now, the coupon is stated as a percent of the face, so turn it into a dollar amount. There's a reason for that. There's a reason. In just a minute, I'm going to show you a percentage that looks, and you can get the two confused. Which one do I put in where in the calculator? You'll never get it confused if you immediately turn the coupon into a dollar amount. Okay? Now, the analysts in the back room, the finance people, you are boss, and I am he is a lowly analyst. You go back there, you let a little sunshine in, give him some gruel to eat, and he's grateful. Thank you, evil master. And you say, okay, I want you to figure out the coupon. And he said, it's 5.4%. That's where that 5.4% came from, was he determined that. He determined that the risk of this bond is commensurate with rewarding the lenders with 5.4% in the prevailing interest rate environment. That's where that 5.4% came from, and you run with it. Okay, let's suppose that he is good. He had my class, so he is as good as they get. Okay? Because the market in its own interpretation, is thinking exactly that. It's saying that the risk of this bond is 5.4%, commensurate with an interest rate. He got it right on the button. You're good. He's good. So now, let's see what the price of this bond would be. Now watch on the calculator, and trust me, it's a lot, so much easier on the calculators these days. Back in the old days, it was just such a pain in the dare he ask to do these. Okay. Now, the N for the purposes of this calculation are 20 is 20 years. 20 years N. Oops, let me do this. Don't ever forget to hit the reset button. I got to remember that. It probably wouldn't have mattered there. 20 years, N, 20 N. And I always hit enter. It's just the thing I do, okay? Next, what we're going to do is we're going to say, all right, the payments are $54 a year. Payment, 54 PMT. Now, the next thing we're going to do is say the face value. This is the future value, because this is going to pay the lender $54 a year for 20 years, and then at the end of 20 years, there would be one last $54 payment, and there would also be a check for the face value. In other words, corporate and government bonds service the debt over the life of the bond and then retire the bond at the end of the life of the bond. Unlike consumer loans, where you are servicing the debt and amortizing the loan as you go along, with corporate and government debt, all you do is service the debt, pay the interest until the very end. Okay, so now here we are. One last thing is, let's tell the computer what the market thought the interest rate should be. 5.4% I over Y, interest rate per year. You see why I wanted you to do that coupon payment, turn it into a dollar right away, so that you would never get the coupon confused with the market yield? The market yield is a percentage. It goes into the calculator as a percentage. That percent coupon, turn it into a dollar amount, and then you won't want to try to put that into the I over Y. But anyway, let's find out what the price of this bond is. Compute the price value. Well, spank me Jesus. It's $1,000. This bond sells at par. This bond sells at par. Why? Because the bond is paying exactly what the market says it should. The bond is paying 5.4%. So the only thing that is going to be happening with this bond is it will pay its $54 payments. And the market says $54 is just what it should pay, 5.4%. Now suppose, however, that particular day, you had taken too much crack cocaine for breakfast. And you priced the bond, let's say you priced the bond at 5.6%. That would be $56 a year. The market yield is only 5.4%. So the market's going to look at this. Holy cow! This is a bond that should be paying 5.4%, and it's paying 5.6%? Really? Let's see what happens if you put in a $56 payment. Compute the price value again. It's selling at a premium to par. It's selling at $1,024.10. Because this bond is paying more than it should. And so the market's going to say, well, I'll be darned. And you'll have buyers invest, buy in, pushing the price up because this bond is paying more than it needs to pay. So at this level, it'll pay $1,024.10. Let's suppose that you screwed up the other way and you priced the coupon for 5.2%, but the market yield is 5.4%. Let's see what happens now. $52. In other words, you're paying less than what the market wants. Well, guess what's going to happen? Compute the price value. That's a paddling. That's a nine. The market is now, this bond is selling at a discount to par. At a discount to par. 975.90. So in other words, when the coupon is above the yield, the bond will sell at a premium to par. Again, when the coupon is above the market yield, the bond will sell at a premium to par. But when the coupon is below the market yield, the bond will sell at a discount to par. Again, but when the coupon is below the market yield, the bond will sell at a discount to par. That's the kind of question that I might ask on your first exam, which is on the 13th. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. Wink, wink. Okay? This is the kind of, this is one of the deep questions I could ask. On the written exam, you don't write numbers. I don't want to see you show me a formula. A formula is not an answer. It shows you don't understand what I'm looking for. I'm looking for you to write no more than two sentences and nail the answer. Some of them will be easy, just definitions. Some of them will be hard. I'll say a little bit more about the exam in a few minutes here. Something I should caution you about, I got to remember to do something for you. Bonds, when you look at bonds in a newspaper or on an online resource, you would see not a price, but a quote. You would see a quote. A quote is a tenth of the price. It does not have a dollar sign on it, for God's sake, because it's not a dollar amount. This quotation notation is ancient history. See, back hundreds of years ago, in the broadsheets that they used to issue every morning with the price and afternoon with the prices of things, they had to get so many things in there in these very narrow columns that it just was, you would give only a tenth of the price of a bond. And that's historically been the way it is. In fact, on the second, that quiz that I gave you, that special topics quiz, I gave you a quote, and most of you didn't got it wrong because you didn't know what the hell I was talking about. So I got to give you all the points for that, and I haven't remembered to do that yet. But I gave you the quote on that Treasury bill. What did I say, like 97.88 instead of the actual price? And a lot of you screwed it up because you didn't know what you thought that was a price. It's not. That was a quote, and so I got to go back and give you all credit for that question because I screwed up on that. But, okay, a little background story. I've known these people over the years who thought they were geniuses, day traders. There was this one guy, very colorful fellow, many years back. He was one of those day traders who had a computer before hardly anyone else had a computer. And he was talking about, I know all about this. I don't need some stupid degree like you've got. Blah, 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 blowing off the mouth. And he was always getting himself in trouble because he didn't know what he was doing. He saw the quote on a bond. He bought 10 bonds at $98.95 each. And then he had this total heart attack when he got a bill for almost $10,000. I bought 10 for $98. Look at this price. I'm going to sue the Wall Street Journal. I'm going to sue the broker. Frank, you dumbass. That was a quote. That wasn't the price. The price was 10 times what you saw as a quote. But he didn't know that, and so he had a giant bill on his hands he wasn't expecting. Anyhow, little broader story about these. Bonds can be described in different ways. How long, okay, first of all, this is the trading symbol of the company. This is the coupon, and then you'll get the price. Now, actually, honestly, in real life, we won't know the market yield. We'll know the price, and then we'll back into the yield, and I'll do that in just a minute here. But what was I going? Oh, there are a lot of different ways. You know, is it a bond? Is it a note? Is it a bill? Is it a primary issue? This is a primary issue. What I'm describing here is from the lender out into the market. However, you, having bought some of these bonds, sir, might in 5 years decide you want to sell them. So there would be secondary market activity. As a matter of fact, almost none of you in here will ever buy primary paper, stock or bond. In other words, you will never buy in an offering. You will buy later in the secondary market because that would be where common people like us do our purchases. Truth be told, you, madam, you don't have time for me. I mean, I'm some little tiny nothing. You need to talk to big dogs with lots and lots of money. And I'm not talking about, you know, well, I got $10,000 in the bank or I got $100,000. No. You're dealing with millions and millions and hundreds of millions. That's the kind of people, entities you deal with. You don't have time to sell stock in a primary offering. You don't have time to call me and tell me that there's a new bond issue coming out. If I want some of those bonds, I have to buy them later in the secondary market, down the road somewhere, okay? So that's one way, is the primary issue, secondary issue. However, a more important thing is to consider the risk of the bond. Bonds can be considered either investment grade or less than investment grade. That's a polite way of saying junk. Bonds are either investment grade or they are junk bonds. That's based upon the risk of them. So in other words, a very powerful corporation borrowing money, like a Netflix, when it borrowed money, issuing notes, and I think it issued bonds, but it issued notes, that was investment-grade paper. If you have Earl's Auto Shop and Baptist Reading Room borrowing money, that might not be investment-grade. Might not be. I'm not saying it isn't. Earl could be a really, really good business person. But be a little suspicious. There are three primary rating services that rate bonds. And each of them has a different way of designating them. But they're all letters like AAA, ABA, that kind of stuff, down to CC, CD. So they each have their own rating structure. But the three are Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch. And their ratings drive bond. I mean, if I know that Fitch is going to give me a low rating on a bond, I know I'm going to have to put the coupon pretty high. But here's the background story, a couple of background stories. First and foremost, in the early years of the 21st century, back when you were kind of coming of age, it was even before you were in your teens, it was turning into a Wild West, the finance industry was. I mean, you'd had some scandals, and Congress got self-righteous and passed Sarbanes-Oxley, but really it was just going cuckoo bananas. Risky as hell paper was flying. Some of it I can't even describe for you. Matter of fact, no one can describe some of the paper. It was so complex, the contracts were. But anyway, these services, especially Standard & Poor's, they were giving this stuff very high ratings. This is a high-quality debt instrument, when in fact, this instrument was so risky. I mean, no one should have invested in it. Certainly not trust funds, insurance companies, but they relied on these rating services that were saying this is AAA investment grade stuff. And of course, when all hell broke loose in the collapse of 2008, it was just like, I mean, these bonds went to hell. Trust funds were destroyed. Human lives, people's lives were ruined. Pension funds that invested in this, relying on these high ratings from these rating services, and it was worthless, those ratings were. Well, the interesting thing was that after the crisis was over in 2009, well, it was clear what had happened, the crisis was not over for years, the government came in and kicked these rating services in the ass, especially Standard & Poor's. Just kick them hard. Find the hell out of them. Of course, unfortunately, no one goes to prison in this in the corporate world, sadly. But, I mean, they just paddled them. The government did. So what does Standard & Poor's do? Standard & Poor's, instead of learning its lesson and wiping its ass of all the blisters it had gotten, it downgraded the rating of government bonds. Oh, government, you're going to punish us for being a bunch of jackasses? Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to downgrade the rating of U.S. government bonds and say that they're not as safe as they should be. That was how Standard & Poor's dealt with being spanked. Interesting thing. Standard & Poor's, in other words, didn't learn its lesson. But let me reel you back to the 1990s, back when I was doing consulting. I was helping little companies go public, be good, do things in compliance and all that, which was a lot harder than it should have been, but it seems like these companies didn't really want to. But anyway, some of these companies, I knew that in order for them to get really respectable and to have their paper get respectable, and if they borrowed money to have the bonds have good ratings, I was going to have to go to these services, one of them, and get ratings for future debt instruments. So I went to one of them. I won't tell you which one it is on this list, but it was one of those three. I knew nothing about this world. I honestly didn't. I was just walking in cold. And I called, and I had to feel around. I said, I've got a public company. It just went public a while back, and I need to get a rating for bond issues, for bonds for it. Well, does it have bonds already? No. But what we want to do is get forward, get in front of this so that we have a bond rating so that we'll have an understanding of where we have to put coupons when we do issue. Okay, well, did some talking and talked to a couple of different people, and then they faxed me. This was before there was really email much. They faxed me their fee sheet. And I was just mystified. The fees went from anywhere from $20,000 up to almost $1 million. And I thought, well, okay, what am I seeing here? What am I getting for $800,000 that I'm not getting for $20,000? I don't understand. And they were really vague about how this worked. So I called an old securities attorney I knew out in California. I tried not to bother him too often, but I knew he could give me an understanding. He could explain it in real clear terms. And he said, well, son, you don't get it, do you, at all? No. He said, the more you pay, the better your rating's going to be. What? Yeah, this is pay to play. So if I pay them like $700,000, I am more assured of getting something like a BBB. But if I pay them 20, I'm probably going to see a D rating. He said, oh, you're a quick study, aren't you, son? I said, this is bullshit. He said, oh, well, that's one name for it. But it was pay to play. The more you paid, the better you were going to get a rating off this service. And I thought, the hell with this. I explained to the directors, this is what it's all about. They were all excited. We're going to get rated R. We're getting real respectable. I told them how it worked, and they lost their interest in that real fast. But of course, then when we tried to borrow on an issue, the first time we tried to do a serious issue, $10 million, we had no rating. We're blind on coupon. Coupon was way below the issue failed. It just failed because the coupon was too low because it was so risky because there was no rating on it from a service. So there you are. That was the world back in the 90s. And then in the 2000s, they were just rating. Of course, these were companies that were paying them a fortune for the ratings. And they were giving them insanely high ratings for paper that was trash. Not even junk. It was toilet paper that it was used. Used toilet paper. And of course, all that used toilet paper went to hell in the crash and left. Okay. Let me give you a number. Bad, toxic paper. It's all out there still. It was never taken out. It was never made to go away. It was just buried. Those are zombies sitting out there to this day from the crisis of 2008. It's still there. You can't make it go away. What is the notional value of that toxic paper that's still spinning around out there that no one talks about at all? Here's a good estimate of the notional value. That's right, $63 trillion. That's right, $63 trillion. Is zombie paper out there still spinning around? It isn't dead. It's just rotting in the global economy. But don't worry. I'm going to take away $19 trillion of that. Because in 2013, $19 trillion of that toxic zombie paper was the subject of quiet legislation by the U.S. Congress that made you, the taxpayers, liable for taking care of it down the road. So really, you'll pay for $19 trillion of it. So the zombie paper that no one has claimed responsibility for is just a mere $44 trillion. Makes you feel good? Good. Okay. That's why my ass gets in trouble teaching you guys. Okay, back to it. Like I said, in the actual world of trading, we know the price. I would see BCJ 6.6%, 2046, it's new issue. And I would see a quote on that of 98.65. That would be the quote. I'm getting a little bit closer to real here now, showing you the quote instead of the price. I mean, you're going to see the price. And then you back into the yield. You back into the yield. Okay? So now let's do it. We're going to see. Now you see. Oh, okay. No. Okay. Is this bond selling at a premium or a discount to par? Look at the 98.65. Is that a premium or a discount to par? Discount. Bingo. Discount to par. It's below 100, $1,000, okay? So this one's selling at a discount to par. So that tells me that the market yield is going to be higher than 6.6%. In other words, this coupon is not enough to make the market happy. So the market is punishing this bond by pushing its price down below par. So whatever I get, I should see a number above 6.6%. So lock and load here. Let's see what happens. Reset. Now, on this one, the issue is 30 years, N is 30. The price value of it remember, turn this into a dollar amount. $986.50. And that would be the, don't forget, negative. Anytime you put in a PV, it's a negative. I hate that, but that's the way it is. PV, enter. I don't think I have to put the enter. Okay, now this coupon is $66 a year. 66. Pound in that coupon. And don't forget that future value, that face value, that kicker at the end. You get $1,000 at the end too. Don't miss any of the steps or you get burned. If you do all the steps, I mean, this is just calculator stuff. Okay, so now compute the I over Y. There it is. 6.71% rounded. The market yield is 6.71%. See? That tells me I got it. I knew this bond was selling at a discount to par, so I knew the market thought this bond's coupon was too low. And there it is. The market says 6.6% is not enough. It's six. What we really wanted to see was 6.71%. Okay? So you, it's almost like you'll know if you got the right answer in one like this. Now let me do a little stunt here. Like I said, most bonds actually pay semi-annual. Okay? So the way you deal with that with a calculator, all you do is take the coupon payments and you make them half of what they were. What was this? $66 a year? So you make it 33, and that's your payment. And then you double the number of periods, because if it's 30 years, that would be 30 times 2, 6 months, semi-annuals. So I just do 60 for the N. Now here's where you have to watch it with a yield. Here's where you have to watch it with a yield. Because when I compute the yield, I'm going to get a half-year yield. So I have to times it by 2 to get it to be right. So compute I over Y. Don't forget to times this by 2, okay? If I do times 2 on 3.35252, it'll come out to be 7.70%. Slightly different. It gets worse if, in this case, that was not too much of a discount to par. But if there's a wide spread between par and the price, that yield can be kind of significantly different depending on whether you use annual or semi-annual payments. So in this case, using semi-annual payments, the yield would be 6.70%. Just be a little careful on that, okay? Watching those problems, if it says semi-annual, make the payments half and the number of periods double. Make the payments half and the number of periods double. Now, here's an important consideration for you. When this will seem like it's totally random. Sir, are you familiar with Schrodinger's cat? You're not. Madam? Schrodinger's cat was a thought experiment that was one of the lead-ins to the incredibly bizarre world of quantum mechanics. You see, a radioactive particle, an idealized radioactive particle, in any given 24 hours, let's take one that has a 50-50 chance of throwing off a lethal subatomic piece. 50-50 chance. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a cat and we're going to put it in a box. Close the box. Okay? And then we're going to put that radioactive thing in there. But we're not going to look inside the box for 24 hours. There's a 50-50 chance that the piece of radioactive material is going to kill the cat. But we don't know during that 24 hours whether the cat has been killed or not. Only at the end, when we open up the box, will we see whether we have a live cat, rather pissed off that we did this to it, or a dead cat. Now, what does that have to do with what we're doing here with bonds? It has this. This bond, 2046. Now, let's say that it was issued on October 3, 2016. So now we go forward 30 years to October the 1st of 2046. Now, there could be two things going on with that company. I'm the company. I could be alive, kicking, or I could be dead, like the cat. Okay, so if I am the live cat, what's going to happen in 2 days, in a couple of days? The bond's going to pay its $1,000. You follow that? Sure. But if I am dead in 2 days, what's the bond going to pay? Zero. Okay, technically, you know, there might have been a liquidation, the bond, we'll talk about that. But I mean, for all practical purposes, you got nothing. So either I'm alive and I pay $1,000, or I'm dead and I pay nothing. So if you are 2 hours from when I pay on the bond, it's going to pay in 2 hours, and you buy it. It doesn't really matter what the market thinks the yield is versus what the coupon is. In 2 hours, it's going to pay you either $1,000 or $0, regardless of the spread between the yield and the coupon. Now, normally, if the yield is above the coupon, the bond sells at a discount to par. If the yield is below the coupon, then the bond sells at a premium to par. However, as the term approaches zero, in other words, as the bond approaches its maturity date, as the term approaches zero, the bond will approach either approach either par or zero. You look 2 days before a bond issue pays off. It doesn't matter what the market thinks the yield is. It doesn't matter what the coupon is. The bond's either going to have a price of par or zero. One or the other. So, if this is the term of the bond, in other words, how much time is left? Here's $100, $500, here's par, as the term approaches zero, bonds that were where the yield was below the coupon, yeah, they were selling out here when there was a long time left. They were selling at a premium to par. But as the term approaches zero, it doesn't matter that the yield was below the coupon. The coupon was generous. It doesn't matter that the coupon was generous. 2 seconds before the bond pays off, it's going to be worth $1,000 because whoever holds the bond is going to get $1,000. On the other hand, if the yield was below the coupon, if the yield was above the coupon, in other words, this bond wasn't paying as much as it should, it really doesn't matter. The bond's going to sell it at par. I mean, because at the end, you're going to get $1,000. If you were trading that bond the day before, and any bond that it's either going to be here or it's going to be here. You don't know which. However, there is one thing that's clear on this. You knew about Schrodinger's cat? Okay, we can cheat with the cat. I'm going to listen at the box. Okay, cat's still alive. 10 hours. After 14 hours, cat's still alive. 22 hours. Meow. 23 hours. Weird subatomic particle genetic thing. Real, you know. But it's still a cat, you know. Okay. So the point, though, is that we will, for all practical purposes, we will know whether it's going to hit 1,000 or zero. Because we'll see that the company's dead days before. If the company's alive, we're going to get our $1,000. If the company's dead, we'll get zero. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that on a test that I give in class, this would be a classic kind of question. What is the relationship between the term of a bond and the spread between coupon and yield? Now, next week, on Tuesday, all I'm going to do is go through review with you for the test. Don't anyone ask me for a study guide. Life doesn't have a study guide, okay? But we're going to go through. But understand this. You answer in, this would be one of my deep questions. You'll have just definition kinds of questions. So, but then you'll have some that require that you explain something that's a deeper concept. This is a deeper concept in 240, FIL 240. So this would be a very good question. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Okay? A very good question. But know this, whatever I ask on that exam, it's from lectures. The book might have brought it up, but I don't care. What matters is that it was in a lecture. And there are five questions, and you answer four, any four of them. Don't answer five. I will eat your ass if you answer five. I've got 400 exams to read. Well, you just give me the high call, my four best answers. No! And second, on Tuesday, I'm going to give you like 10 possible questions. Don't run to Wikistupedia for an answer, okay? Don't, or to Investopedia. I'll know if you've done that because you'll have a bad answer. And I have a bullshit stamp that I just got re-inked. Those sites are weird. The weirdos of who write Wikipedia, I mean, those are seriously mentally ill people. Think about it. You spend your life writing factual information. You don't have a life outside. You've never seen sunlight. I mean, all you do is, and most of the stuff they have in finance is dead wrong in some dangerous way. Most of it's right, and then they get something way wrong. In medical stuff, there was this one study that found that 9 of their 10 diagnoses of illnesses were absolutely wrong. Don't do that. Use your notes, use my podcasts as your study guides. And then on Tuesday, you come with questions for me. This isn't a TV show where I talk to you. It's a dynamic interaction. If you say, is this going to be on the exam? And it's not, I'll say no. I'm not going to ask that. So it's worth it for you to narrow your scope of study. And yes, you are allowed a 4x6 note card for the exam. Okay? That's a comfort sheet. If you know what you're doing, you walk into that exam, you're done in 30 minutes. You're done. If you don't know what you're doing, you will still be here when Jesus comes back. Okay? I'm serious. Last time, last semester, spring semester, everyone was gone in 40 minutes except for this guy and this gal up in the top. They were still tearing their hair out. When it was, time was up, the next class was coming in. And they were insisting that this was really hard. And of course, one interesting aspect of what that was that I didn't recognize them at all. This was the first, they had not even bothered to come to class except for this. Okay, so if you do right, now I'm going to give you a warning. If you notice, the first exam is worth 5%, the second exam is worth 10%, the final is worth, I think, 15 or 20%. There's a reason for that. You're going to do not very well on the first exam. Okay? Well, who am I kidding? Your score is going to qualify for thissucks.com. Okay? It's going to be a bad score. You're going to have your feelings hurt because I'm going to say, no, you didn't answer the question. No, you didn't use proper grammar. Don't text language me on an exam, okay? Don't, and for God's sake, don't ever lol me on an exam. Don't, okay? Don't put lol for anything. Last spring, someone said, I really don't know the answer to this question, lol. God! Then last, I asked a question about something going toward par value. Someone drew a picture of a golf green with a little flag and a golf ball going toward it and wrote above it, par. I was so torn. I so wanted to flunk his ass. But at the same time, it was such a darn good answer. But another thing also on the exam is for... two sentences is going to be more than enough. If you're writing an essay, you're wrong. And don't write me a formula. A formula is not an answer. A graph is not an answer. In econ, did you go through one of the econ courses? Did you have an instructor where they drew supply and demand graphs all the time on you? That's not how you teach. That's a crutch. That's a tool. If they can't say this without showing a graph, then they can't say it. Same in my class. If you can't explain to me a concept without going to a formula or to a graph, you don't understand it. This is an easy exam. You know me. I'm a sweetheart. Also, I live Twitter feed my exam grading. So as I'm going along, there will be Twitter posts. Some of them will be, oh my God, someone just answered a question the stupidest I've ever seen. Or I will show a picture, post a picture of one of my cats helping me grade your exams. I do that. So if you want to follow the live Twitter feed as I'm grading, I always edit out the Jack Daniels bottle. But I'm sober. I got coffee. But you'll actually see that too, live Twitter feed while I'm grading. Okay, so anyway. But we'll talk more about this on Tuesday. But your big warning is this would be a heavy, okay? And then there will be some that will be more definitional. But that's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.